And a very good morning to you. Welcome to the papers. It's Monday, the 18th of March, 2024. Hope you're well. If you're Irish, have you a sore head? Have you? Funnily enough, it's 6:19 as I record this. Right now, it's the day after St. Patrick's Day. Of course, I hope if you celebrated, that is, that you had a great St. Patrick's Day. I had one of the most amazing St. Patrick's Day experiences, I suppose, I'll ever have, because after the Sunday Morning Melodies programme yesterday, I ambled my way down the road, the 20-minute walk to Old Trafford for the FA Cup quarter-final, United hosting Liverpool, and I have to say, I might go to a million more football games. I'll never experience anything like that atmosphere. United somehow overcame Liverpool 4-3 in extra time to advance to the semi-final, where they'll play Coventry. And how we won that game will be beyond me for the remainder of my days. Liverpool should have killed it off in the second half. They had umpteen chances to do so. Didn't. United came back from 2-1 to equalise late on, force extra time, and the rest is history. Mental. Walking back up the road yesterday, I was shaking my head thinking, did that just happen? Wonderful. The atmosphere helped by the fact that in the FA Cup you tend to give the home team allocates more seating than usual to the away team. So there were 9,000 Liverpool fans there yesterday. Many of them above me. I was in the East Stand lower behind the East Stand goal. And the East Stand upper was chock full of Liverpool fans. The noise, the atmosphere, the singing was amazing. And I did what I normally do. I kept my mouth shut to protect the golden dulcet tones of the BBG. And if you believe that, I'll tell you another. I mean the part about golden dulcet tones. I generally keep my mouth shut at the sport. I clap and I wave my hands around animatedly. But I do refrain from screaming because it doesn't do the voice any good, you know? Okay, let's have a look at the front pages of today's UK newspapers. Enough of the football talk. The Eye. You know the post office scandal? How postmasters and postmistresses were wrongly accused of theft. Some of them went to jail because of dodgy IT. IT, which was made by or managed by Fujitsu. You know that big scandal, and postmasters and postmistresses are receiving compensation now and will be exonerated in an act of parliament, exonerating them all, quashing their convictions. Well, a number of papers today, including the Eye paper, running with this, the headline on the Eye, revealed top secret UK military system still managed by Fujitsu. Amazing. The Eye paper describing how, despite the scandal around the company Fujitsu and the part it played in this post office scandal, that its software is still managing a highly classified British military computer system nearly 2 years after its government contract to do so should have expired. The firm still running a military project because of delays in vetting replacement contractors, and because Fujitsu is deeply embedded in the UK military. So that's big story on the Eye paper. How could Fujitsu still be involved? Well, it is. The Metro headline. Hester La Vista, Rishi. No way is the headline. So this is another story doing the rounds this morning. The claim that Rishi Sunak faces a backbench Tory plot to get rid of him before the election. Hester La Vista Rishi. Hester is a pun on Frank Hester, the multi-millionaire donor who made the alleged racist remarks about the former Labour MP Diane Abbott. You know all about this. It was the big story last week. So the claim is he's going nowhere. Number of papers saying that Penny Mordaunt, you know, he might be axed in favour of Penny Mordaunt, but the Metro leads with with a claim, with a quote by the Tory minister Mark Harper, that he will not be axed before the general election. So paper saying he might be gone, he might be ousted through a vote of no confidence, and then somebody like Mordaunt might step in, but senior Tories like Mark Harper saying this will not happen. The Daily Mail, Sunak allies rage at Penny. Again, the Mail claims the Prime Minister will lead a political fight back during a speech in the Midlands today. It follows reports over the weekend some sections of the Tory party want to get rid of him in favour of Penny Mordaunt. The Guardian, watchdog condemns NHS culture of cover-up. We'll come back to that. The Guardian also carries a photograph of the widow of Alexei Navalny, Yulia Navalnya. The Russian election has taken place. Vladimir Putin has won, surprise, surprise. Well, there's no surprise there, of course, with around 90% of the vote. He didn't have a legitimate challenger or a credible challenger, according to many of the newspapers today. And a number of governments are claiming that the election in Moscow, well, the election in Russia, was rigged. Thousands protested in Moscow, didn't they? Some newspapers, some online editions carrying photographs of these protests in Moscow and elsewhere. As the Daily Telegraph, embattled PM urges Tories, stick with me. You get that, don't you? We've talked about it already. He'll tell backbenchers today the economy is turning a corner, and he's calling on his fellow MPs, is the Prime Minister, the Tory MPs, to hold their nerve. The Times, this is our bounce back year, Sunak tells critics. Tory rebels are warned that the PM will not roll over. The Daily Mirror, Dark Ages Dentistry is the headline. Dark Ages Dentistry. Well, the Mirror's main story claims 200,000 people have backed a protest by the Mirror to save British dentistry, which it says is in the Dark Ages. Daily Express, headline, Tory MPs plot to topple Rishi is just self-indulgence. That's according to Esther McVeigh. Self-indulgence from backbench MPs is to blame for this rebellion against Rishi Sunak. It remains, by the way, to be seen. It remains to be revealed when the election will take place this year. It had been, it was believed it might happen on May 2nd. There are a few more days left. There is time for it to be called for May 2nd, but some commentators believe it's likely, more likely now, to be later in the year, maybe early autumn. Daily Star leads with Easter a Beaster. That is the headline. The Star says Brits are bracing for a powerful storm, which will see river and groundwater levels reach peak highs, with the end of the UK winter set to feel extra dreary this year. That is the front page of The Star. Let's jump inside the papers then this Monday, the 18th of March 2024. What are they talking about? This one is interesting. It's funny and tragic and silly and dangerous. In the Times, artist restricted from her own show over gender views. Really? Yeah, well, according to the Times, an artist was told she needed to give 24 hours notice to attend her own exhibition, and she was reported to the police after saying, shock horror, she believed it was harmful for children to try to change sex. The artist in question is Victoria Culf. She's 43. I thought the newspapers had given up on revealing the age of people featured in stories. It had been, I'm pretty sure there was some consensus reached amongst editors some years ago not to be doing this, lest they be accused of ageism. But anyway, the Times is doing it. She's 43. Was setting up her independently funded exhibition at Watford Museum when a borough council employee began talking to her about transgender issues. Now, this sounds like a setup to me. So there she is with her exhibits, this artist, and she's going about her business setting it up, and a council employee began talking to her about trans issues. Sounds to me, although the Times doesn't say, but maybe somebody was trolling this woman's social media pages, because that sounds a bit set up-ish, doesn't it? Set up-ish. Anyway, she says she politely revealed, because of her beliefs and her experience with children and young people, she believed transitioning them was harmful. She added to the employee of the council that the NHS Gender Identity Development Service at the Tavistock Centre, which has been criticised for its treatment of children with gender dysphoria, should be shut down. In fact, it's closing at the end of this month. She, Colf, the artist, says after the conversation, she received a call from the council telling her of harassment allegations and saying she couldn't enter the exhibition without giving 24 hours notice. What a load of old bollocks. Sounds like she was set up, that somebody knew that she had these views about not transitioning children, so they decided to go up, engage her in a conversation, get her to basically affirm these views, and then set her up. This is the crazy fucking Stasi world we live in now in 2024, you know. This is it. And all this serves is to promote self-censorship. That's what you'll have. This will become the norm. People will... This will permeate, that's the word, the culture. It'll permeate the very bodies, the very skin of every person, of every man, woman and child. This will hit them. And they will become aware subconsciously or consciously that every time anybody speaks to them, people will become wary, you know, and they won't reveal what they really think or say what they really believe for fear of a punitive measure being taken against them. This is a mad story, this, you know. You harassed somebody, you know, you're a bigot, so therefore you must give us 24-hour notice before you attend your own exhibition. I mean, Jesus. The Telegraph. BBC told to stop murdering Agatha Christie novels. It's about bloody time. Now, I've read a few Agatha Christie novels. I'm sure you have too. When I was a teenager, when I would read anything, a voracious reader, I would read Agatha Christie. When I was growing out of the Enid Blytons and I moved on to more adult literature. So the BBC should stop rewriting the plots of Agatha Christie and come up with original ideas instead, according to Andrew Wilson. He's an author who has spent years researching Agatha Christie, and recent BBC adaptations of Christie's mysteries have committed multiple crimes against the original text, going so far as to change the identity of the murderer in Ordeal by Innocence. Excuse me. In The Pale Horse, the protagonist was turned into a murderer despite killing nobody in the original book. Both were written by Sarah Phelps, whose third adaptation, The ABC Murders, gave Hercule Poirot a backstory as a Catholic priest. This one is hilarious. I mean, this is the BBC all over, right? The most recent BBC One adaptation, Murder is Easy, switched the investigator from a retired British policeman returning from the Far East to a young Nigerian man coming to England to take up a job in Whitehall. Jesus. I mean, yeah. Yeah, diversity. Let's have some diversity. What was the character in the original story? Well, it was a retired British policeman coming back from the Far East. Well, let's change that to a Nigerian man. So Andrew Wilson is fed up with this and said that Agatha Christie was in fact horrified by 1960s films starring Margaret Rutherford as Miss Marple because the stories didn't resemble those in her novels. She was precious about her plots, said Wilson. In fact, she did a deal with MGM in her lifetime, sold the rights to a number of novels, and was appalled with what she'd done because as she watched those Margaret Rutherford films, for all the joy and humour they have, they've nothing to do with her plots. BBC, stop fucking around with the plots of Agatha Christie novels, says Andrew Wilson. Yes. Here's a very serious story in The Guardian. NHS Ombudsman warns hospitals are cynically burying evidence of poor care. Wow. Hospitals are cynically burying evidence about poor care in a cover-up culture that leads to avoidable deaths and families being denied the truth about their loved ones, the NHS Ombudsman has warned. Ministers, NHS leaders, hospital boards are doing too little to end the health service's deeply ingrained cover-up culture and victimisation of staff who turn whistleblower, according to the Ombudsman. In an interview with The Guardian, as he prepares to step down after 7 years, Rob Behrens, that's the man, the Ombudsman, Rob Behrens, claimed many parts of the NHS still put reputation management ahead of being open with relatives who have lost a loved one due to medical negligence. This is evil stuff. It really is. He, the Ombudsman Behrens, said that although the NHS was staffed by, quote, brilliant people working under intense pressures, too often his investigations into patients' complaints had revealed cover-ups, quote, including the altering of care plans and the disappearance of crucial documents after patients have died, and robust denial in the face of documentary evidence, end quote. Imagine altering care plans, falsifying data, disappearing documents after someone has died, and then you deny all of this even though there is evidence to debunk you. He's horrified. He's urged ministers to overhaul the way the NHS deals with complaints and how the array of regulatory bodies scrutinise the NHS. His concerns included, wait for this, avoidable deaths were too common, especially in maternity care, mental health and cases of sepsis, which is blood poisoning. The NHS sometimes did dreadful and cynical things in obstructing families' pursuit of the full facts about a death, including lying and concealing evidence. The service's legal duty of candour was not forcing hospitals to be open when things went wrong. Oh my God. Lying and concealing evidence to obstruct a family finding out the full facts about the death of a loved one should result in people going to prison for the rest of their lives, in the opinion of this Baldy Gammon. I mean, this guy says this is routine. It is routine. This nonsense, common, that somebody would be killed by negligence and that the NHS would go into overdrive to lie and to conceal evidence about that death. When this is discovered, everybody involved in it should go to prison for a very long time and never again work in healthcare. That's a big and important story in today's Guardian. You can read it at theguardian.com/UK. The outgoing ombudsman saying, what a mess. The headline, hospitals cynically burying evidence of poor care. I said to the future missus, you know, and this is not bravado now, this is true, that whatever medical issues might be, I might face further, please God, further down the road, that I never spend a second inside a hospital, that I will receive whatever care I need to receive at home and by people that we trust to give me whatever care, and the same for herself, never, ever would I enter a hospital, knowing what I know now in 2024. This is the Papers Podcast. The Express, let's go inside the Express. Teacher sacked for refusing to treat pupil as boy explains reason ahead of court showdown. This is a female teacher, lost her job, wouldn't treat an 8-year-old female as a boy, and will tell an employment tribunal she had serious concerns for the welfare of the kid involved. She was told by the head teacher of the school where she works that she had to heed the pupil's wishes to socially transition in line with the guidance of LGBT charity Stonewall. This meant the teacher would have to use a boy's name, would have to refer to the girl as a boy, using a boy's name and using male pronouns. Now, crucially, this had the support of the parents. So the parents were happy for this little girl to be identified as a boy, to have a boy's name and use boy's pronouns. The parents supported the child wearing a boy's uniform, using the boy's toilets and the boy's changing rooms. But the female teacher raised the matter as a safeguarding issue on the premise that the child and school peers were endangered by this move in the short and the long term. The teacher, who for legal reasons is being referred to as Hannah, has said, "We hear a lot about protected characteristics. What about the right of a child to grow up? This is heartbreaking." This teacher says she believes that kids are being supported by teachers and schools to truly believe they are born in the wrong body, and that ultimately this is leading to long-term harm for the child involved. Interesting. In the Express, it'll be an interesting tribunal to follow, won't it? What the tribunal decides in the end. The Sun. BBC in fresh bias row after journalists like posts celebrating attacks on Israel. What is going on here? What is going on here? Now, this is interesting because it has been reported overnight that Israel has launched an attack on Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, with heavy tank and heavy gunfire at the facility. Israel says that Hamas is operating a control centre from inside the hospital. Hamas says this is absolute bollocks. Eyewitnesses have been putting out videos and statements on social media and sending WhatsApp messages to say there is no Hamas operatives in the hospital, that this is just more crimes against humanity by the Israeli Defence Forces. So that's happening right now and is being reported on now by the BBC and other news bureaus. Israel has attacked Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza, saying it's to get Hamas. Everybody else is saying this is nonsense, there is no Hamas there. So, with that in mind, The Sun is running a story, BBC in fresh bias row, journalists have liked posts celebrating attacks on Israel. And this is about three BBC employees who work for the fact-check unit BBC Verify. Who's accusing The Sun doesn't say, funnily enough, who is accusing. It's an anti-Semitism campaigner. That's right. It's an anti-Semitism campaigner called David Collier, just another Zionist attack dog for the Israeli government, presumably. He's uncovered these posts by BBC journalists, and they apparently liked or backed social media posts supporting rocket strikes against Israelis. They've named these BBC staffers, and they are demanding retribution, these anti-Semitism campaigners. A Jewish Tory MP, Andrew Percy, has said the BBC is institutionally Israel-phobic. The BBC says, "We do not comment on individual staff matters." But it must be admitted now, right? No BBC journalist, no journalist should be liking any post which is talking about attacks against anybody, whether it be Israel, whether it be the Palestinians. As a journalist, you shouldn't be liking anything that is describing a hostile act committed by one group against another. You know, you're supposed to be somehow objective. You're supposed to report on it objectively. I kind of understand why some Jews in the UK might be a bit pissed off by that. That's in The Sun. And there's an interesting story in The Times, and this has been, there's been a bit of chat about this over the weekend. Residents will get a say on low traffic neighbourhoods as guidance has been updated. Now, this is interesting, and it isn't interesting in terms of there is an election scheduled this year. It could be very soon, it might be later in the year, in the autumn. But the government is going after councils telling councils that they must consider residents' views before creating new low-traffic neighbourhoods, right? So the government has updated its guidance. The Department for Transport has published draft statutory guidance for councils, insisting that councils must get buy-in from local residents, businesses and emergency services when designing LTN's low-traffic neighbourhoods. And the guidance, the draft statutory guidance, will come into force in the summer, but there might be a new government. And we know that the Labour Party is all in on getting cars off the roads, okay, in 15-minute cities and all of that nonsense. Now, low-traffic neighbourhoods restrict vehicles from using certain roads and prioritise cyclists and pedestrians, as we know. So this move by the government comes after a review uncovered concerns over LTNs, including emergency service delays, the impact on disabled residents and the high number of penalty charge notices the schemes have generated. So the LTNs are basically a triple threat, right? Okay, they make it very difficult for people to drive their cars. They bring an enormous amount of money into local authorities through fining people who drive on streets they are told you shouldn't or cannot drive on. And the third part of the triple threat is they have a real-world impact on people in terms of they are dangerous for the health of people, right? Particularly people with disabilities who depend on people coming to pick them up and to drive them around and to be neighbourly and all the rest of that. So the Department of Transport says, look, we're going after local authorities to tell them they can't just willy-nilly, you know, start declaring neighbourhoods to be LTNs and basically restricting traffic in these areas without getting proper buy-in and consent from people living in these areas. But as I said, don't get too excited. This government isn't long for the world. We'll have to wait and see, won't we? And in the Telegraph, then finally for today, migration surge drives London population to new record. Wow. London's population has surged to a new record high after a sharp rise in migration and a reversal of the COVID era race for space. Now, the COVID era race for space is basically the idea that people fled London during the lockdowns and in the aftermath of the opening up of society, that a lot of people left London looking to move further north for cheaper rent and cheaper mortgages, right? But the think tank Centre for Cities found the capital has almost certainly surpassed its pre-pandemic peak population of 10.1 million people in a report which raises concerns about the impact on London's creaking infrastructure and services. The Telegraph says thousands of Londoners fled the capital during COVID in a bid to find more spacious accommodation and greenery outside the city, and of course cheaper mortgages and cheaper rental properties. It says the city's population fell by 75,500 between mid-2019 and mid-2021, but that this has been reversed. A rebound in international migration is responsible for this, according to the think tank, and this is having a enormously negative effect on public services in London. Well, surprise, surprise. And it's having an enormously detrimental effect on public services around the country, not just in London. It's being seen in Manchester, in Birmingham, in other parts of the country as well. That was the best of the papers today, Monday the 18th of March 2024. I'm just going back to the BBC News website to see if there's anything there that I can tell you about that might be of interest to you. Not really, no. As I said, there's a lot of reporting on the Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza. There's quite a bit of coverage of the election in Russia. 87% of the vote given to Vladimir Putin, but the United States and Britain and Ukraine, unsurprisingly, saying that the Russian election was stage managed, that Putin didn't have any real opposition, and that it is a farce, I would say. pot kettle, I would say, but that's just me. Let's leave it there. Do join me at 4 o'clock this afternoon, 4 o'clock UK time, for the Richie Allen Show. Dr. Anne McCloskey will be on the programme with me. It's been a long, long time since Anne was on the Richie Allen Show. She'll be on for an extended conversation. A remarkable woman. You don't want to miss her, so join me at 4 o'clock. So until then, have a good Monday. The weather is fairly settled, at least around the northwest of the UK in any case. Monday, Monday, eh? Join me at 4. Until then, from the BBG, bye now.